Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today we have Jeff Blankenberg. Jeff is a Microsoft evangelist and a Windows Phone champ and an author and a cool guy. And how are you, Jeff?
I'm good, Jesse. How are you?
I am really, really good and glad to have you on. I'm very eager to talk to you about a number of things, especially you did recently a series of blog posts called 31 Days of Mango.
Yes, sir.
Tell me about what inspired that and what is involved in 31 Days of Mango.
Well, it's a nightmare to put together and architect, but kind of where it started, this is the third or fourth series I've done like this. My first one was called the 31 Days of Silverlight, and the basic concept behind it was I wanted to really immerse myself in a technology, and I thought, what better way to do that than to have to learn it well enough to explain it to others? And so I just started writing articles more as a reminder to myself of how to do these things, right? How do I do page navigation? How do I do isolated storage, whatever it is? But I spent some time writing these articles, and it turned out pretty well. And so what I found is that the ones that are focused on a very specific technology, like Silverlight or Windows Phone, have been really popular. The second one that I did was actually the 31 days, and I called it the 31 days of Did You Know? And every day it was an article on something you probably did not know, like the fact that there's actually a clipboard ring in Windows 7. A lot of people will go out and buy a third-party tool or something to manage multiple items on their clipboard, but using something like Control-Shift-V, for example, actually allows you to flip through all the things you've recently stored on your clipboard without having to do anything special. So it was a lot of things like that that I was writing them down for myself so I'd remember them. And that's kind of where the 31 Days of Windows Phone came from, and then this most recent series, the 31 Days of Mango.
So tell me what some of the key days are in the 31 days.
The key days. You know, it's hard to say because I really focused on just Mango topics in general. So all of the things that were really new to Windows Phone. And one of the things that I did really to save myself some time this go around was there's 31 articles, but I think I only wrote 17 of them. I actually reached out to a bunch of other Windows Phone developers from around the Midwest and said, hey guys, would you like to write an article on something you're passionate about, right? Maybe OData, maybe it's using the Isolated Storage Explorer or something like that. And so I had a bunch of other developers write some of the articles from their perspectives as well. So I think they're all equally valuable, but the last one actually is promoting your application. And so while most of the articles focus on a specific technology, I think that perhaps the last one has a significant more amount of value because it applies to everyone. For example, if you're not using the gyroscope in your application, then the gyroscope article probably isn't that interesting to you. But promoting your application, getting the word out, letting people know about it, getting it promoted and found and ultimately purchased, I think that's kind of a universal topic. And so that's the last article, number 31.
And can you give us some highlights of what is said in that last article?
Yeah, it's basically, if you build it, they will come doesn't always apply, right? I mean, you can hope that if you put your article in the marketplace and you use appropriate keywords and descriptions and titles and those kinds of things, that people will find your app. But it's really much more about providing as extensive a marketing campaign around your app as you can. Get it promoted on sites that talk about mobile apps. Write an article about it. Build a custom website for yourself. There's actually a really great template, and this is mentioned in the article as well. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but there's a gentleman that built this really great Windows Phone template for a website. It's a one-page HTML page that you can put your screenshots into and your logo and your titles and all that kind of stuff. And it's a really nice looking site for you to just have more information about what your application is and does. And I even recommend taking it a step further and allowing people to have, submit bug requests and stuff, because you'll find a lot of people will submit bugs right in your comments in the review section of your application. And that's, I would really try to deter people from doing that because that stuff's permanent. It's there forever. And you don't want future potential customers to think that there are still bugs in your app. So giving people a venue to interact with you and suggest features or anything else like that are all along those lines. But it's basically just you need to scream from the mountaintop to really get your stuff noticed. And if you do have something great, if you do have something that's really, really pervasive, what you can do is actually reach out to Microsoft, someone like myself or one of the other Windows Phone champs out there, or even guys like Brandon Watson. But if you have something great, they do have ways to additionally market applications, put them in the featured section of the marketplace and things like that. There's no cost to you, but you do have to have something great that they're willing to promote. And we can help you connect with those folks if you need to.
And do you have applications of your own in the marketplace?
Sadly, I do. I've got 16, I think, at this point. The initial ones that I had put out there, I tried just, you know, it was kind of a learning process. I built a few games. I built Rochambeau, Rock, Paper, Scissors, and I even used the accelerometer so you can shake your phone instead of just banging your fist on your hand. And it also includes Rock, Paper, Scissors, Lizard, Spock, which you may have seen on Big Bang Theory. But so I've done that. I did a port of an old board game I liked called Mastermind, which is kind of a code cracking game. And then I've built some other small things. I did one called MathMaster that's it's basically an advanced version of flashcards for kids, right? Addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, but I made it more game-like. And then the bulk of my applications are actually the demo apps that came out of the 31 Days of Mango. So what I found is that for every article that I wrote, I also had to build an accompanying application so that someone could take it apart and build it and use it and understand how it all works together. Just seeing some code snippets on an HTML page isn't always sufficient. And so I had already built these functional working applications, so I figured there was no reason not to also submit them to the marketplace. So I think 9 of my 16 are those types of applications.
And there's no limit to the number that you can put into the marketplace.
Yes and no. So no, technically there is not a limit, but for your $99 registration, what it basically gives you is an unlimited number of applications that you charge money for. So if your application costs even 99 cents, you can put as many of those out there as you'd like. If you want to submit a whole bunch of free applications, let's say I know there's a bunch of folks that take public domain books, and they will make an application out of that book because they don't have to pay any royalties to anyone else. And they'll put that out there for free and maybe put some ads in it or something like that. Yeah, I don't always agree with that strategy, but there are certainly people that do that. And if you have an application that's free, that doesn't cost any money, you actually get 100 submissions with your $99 marketplace fee. And what 100 submissions is not 100 applications. It's actually 100 submissions. So if you build a free application and you submit it and it fails, you now have 99 submissions. It's every time that you submit an application to the marketplace. So again, that really only applies to free applications. And at that point, it's 100 per year because you re-up the $99 each year. So it's not a limit you're likely to hit, but it is important for people to know that that's out there.
Right. Okay. But that sure sounds like a lot of applications can be put in the marketplace.
Correct.
What else have you been working on lately, Jeff?
I don't know if you know this, Jesse, but you and I wrote a book this summer. I didn't know if you were aware of that or not.
No, actually, I was completely oblivious to that.
Yeah, so you and I wrote a book called Migrating to Windows Phone, and as we record this on, I don't know if I'm supposed to announce dates, but as we record this on January 3rd, I believe it's available for purchase in stores and on Amazon and stuff like that, though I noticed it's sold out on Amazon, so it's probably best to get in there and order it as quickly as possible for all of the listeners out there.
Right, but clearly, the shortage is just going to be dramatic as people line up.
It is.
Much like the Harry Potter experience.
Right. I've heard that there are lines around the country waiting to get their copy. And to anyone that wants to, I won't speak for Jesse, but I'm happy to decrease the value of your book and sign it if you do purchase one.
Fair enough. That ought to sell at least two or three books, and I appreciate that.
Kind of what I'm thinking as well. But it is a good book, and it's a really good, you know, kind of sound document of getting into Windows Phone development, especially if you have a lot of other mobile development understanding. You understand the concepts, but maybe you don't know how to do it on Windows Phone. I think this is a really great a book for that. It's kind of at an intermediate level, I think you'd agree. This is not intro to Windows Phone. It's not that, but it's certainly not the reference material that I go to. Like I know Charles Petzold put that book out, you know, Programming Windows Phone. That is a reference book. And it's not that also. It's very much the how-to with a lot of why sprinkled in.
Yes, although I might argue that it would be an okay introduction. It goes beyond introduction, but it would be a reasonable place for someone who is starting with Windows Phone to turn to.
Yes.
So that takes care of the Department of Shameless Self-Promotion. Let's talk a little bit about what it means to be an evangelist for Microsoft. What does that job entail?
Well, you know, it's weird to call it a job even. It's one of those things that becomes your lifestyle. I look at who I was and what I was doing 5 years ago before I joined Microsoft. And, you know, I was a software consultant and I was out working on projects and I'd come home and I'd tinker with stuff, or once in a while, I'd, you know, maybe 2-3 times a year, I'd go to a conference and speak. But it was very rare. And I would, I'd write a blog post when the spirit came to me, but it was never on any kind of regular cadence or anything like that. And now that I'm this sounds so grandiose I don't mean to overstate this. I'm this public figure now for Microsoft, right? People know who I am when they go to conferences and they reach out to me when they have questions or need something from me or from Microsoft. And so it's become one of those things. Like, I just got done with a 2-week vacation, but I still wrote a few blog posts and it's just become kind of who I am. I'm not out there shamelessly promoting Microsoft and shilling their stuff. But I'm legitimately a vocal fan now of a lot of the technologies that I use, you know, specifically Windows Phone, but many other things as well. And I'll use something else. I'm the first to say that I prefer Gmail to any other web-based email system. But a lot of people just assume I'm a Hotmail user diehard, and it's because I work for Microsoft and I've got to toe the company line all the time. And I think that's actually one of the greatest perks to this job, is that as an evangelist for Microsoft, I'm empowered and encouraged to challenge and question the way that we do things. Because I think if I didn't, I lose all of my credibility. I can't just be the guy that says, hey, rah, rah, Microsoft all the time. There are certainly times where there is a better tool for the job. And it's my job to be able to determine those things. Otherwise, I'm just a marketing shill more than a reliable participant in the technology community that people can listen to and believe. So that's the gist, I guess.
But you're connected into a network of other evangelists and local folks in your area.
Correct. Yeah, no, I'm just one other participant in a large community of software developers. I don't run or control or do anything to own a community of developers. I am just another participant. And it's not even in the .NET community or Windows Phone or anything like that. I go to iPhone user groups and Ruby user groups and all sorts of other stuff just because I'm a passionate technologist. I want to know everything. I want to know how to do it. And I think that's one of the biggest requirements of this job is the willingness to give up your free time to pursue knowledge and to share that knowledge with others. I think that's probably one of the biggest things. When people ask me, what's it like to be an evangelist? It's that willingness to just take in as much as you can and then share that with others as a passion, right? Not just as a chore. If this job was a chore, I don't think I would do it.
So how do you spend a typical day?
Well, that's the other question I get often is, what is a week like in the life of an evangelist? There is no week that's like another week. I've been doing this for almost 5 years and it's still not really consistent at all. The empty weeks, the weeks that where I don't have any travel or I don't have anywhere to go, those are the ones where I usually sit down and spend a lot of time knocking out blog posts or planning out some kind of sharing content, right? Maybe it's just a couple of tweets or something like that. But on a normal week, it's really hard to say. I mean, I work with customers when they have the time to work with me. I tend to be the one that has the ultimate flexibility. Another big perk is that I work from home, so I can come and go, you know, as needed. And so I go where I'm wanted. And if that's speaking at a user group in the middle of Michigan, so be it. I'm happy to make the trip up there and do it.
And when you say customers, working with customers, are you on site at customer locations?
Very rarely. My customer is any developer that will listen. It's kind of the way that I frame that up. But really, when there are companies that want a Microsoft representative to come in and talk in depth about a technology, me or one of my teammates are generally the people that get called upon. And so I get asked from time to time to go talk to actual customers, real businesses that need some guidance or some information about development technology. And this may be put together by someone in our sales force, or maybe the customer has a developer that already had a connection with me or one of my teammates. And we go out and we talk about the technologies that Microsoft offers, but we do it in such a way that it's a how to use, how to get started kind of presentation. But more often than not, I'm talking to developers as a whole, right? I'm going where the developers already are, to conferences, to user groups, those kinds of things. And that's where I spend the bulk of my time. I mean, customers are probably 2 to 4 times a month, maybe. But I would bet that I go to at least that many user groups in a month, plus conferences and weekend events and everything else.
Sounds like a busy, demanding, and high involvement job.
It is, and it's one of those things where it really tends to consume you. You're always, you know, user groups are at night, so I spend my entire day working on content or any of the internal stuff that I have to do for Microsoft, you know, reporting and all that kind of stuff. And then once I've done all that, then I go to a user group at night and interact with folks, much like anyone else, right? They go to user groups on their own free time. And so I'm going because I really passionately want to learn, but I'm doing it on a much larger scale, I think, because I also want to get out and meet people and interact and build relationships and do all that. So I think that's where it becomes a bit more consuming. People ask me, hey, why aren't you coming to our Saturday code camp that's 6 hours away from you? And it's not that it's 6 hours away, and it's not that it's your camp. I love all of that stuff. It's that I went to 3 other ones the 3 previous weekends, and my wife and family will kill me if I'm gone another weekend. So that's more often than not the reason I have to get better at saying no, because there's just so much opportunity and so many things going on, which is incredible. It's great to have that kind of community of developers that want to put on so many great events.
And what are you seeing at these local events? Where are people's key interests lie?
I think it varies. If you're going to something like one of the consistent events we see all over the place is something called a Day of .NET, which is obviously very focused on the .NET platform and stack. And at events like that, you see a lot of, you know, ASP.NET MVC, Silverlight, Windows Phone, SharePoint development, those kinds of things are some of the bigger topics that I see quite often. But at a conference like CodeMash, which is coming up next week, which is much more universal, right? It's not a Microsoft event, it's a developer event. At events like those, the topics that I see are almost universal to a technology. You don't often see, here's how you do something in C# or Ruby or Python or anything. What you see is pragmatic presentations on how to be a better developer, how to manage your problem set, how to think about test-driven development without really introducing a technology on top of that. But you do also see the kind of trendy, what is cool right now kind of technologies pop up as well. There's always presentations on Python and Ruby and iPhone and Android and Windows Phone. And you know, there's little things like that that kind of pepper themselves around. But I find that a lot of the really great presentations are the ones that that focus on you as a developer and your knowledge set, rather than just here's how you do this thing. I mean, when we talk about how do I talk to a gyroscope on a device, that is something I could look up in some documentation somewhere. It's nice that someone put it in an article or a presentation that's easy for me to consume, but it is something I could spend my time looking up. But when someone brings their opinions and their thoughts on how to approach a problem set, I think those are the really, really interesting presentations.
And you've got a great presentation coming up at CodeMash, which is the SmackDown event.
Yeah, so that was actually one of the things that I was trying to approach, was we have this thing called Mobile SmackDown. We did it last year, and what it did was pitted a Windows Phone, an Android, and an iPhone developer against each other. I mean, against is a heavy word. It was really meant to be an exhibition, right? There was no competition. There was no winner declared or anything like that. But the basic concept was for people that were interested in mobile development to come, and they'd be able to see the exact same application, same requirements, same everything, built on each of the 3 platforms, and each developer got 15 minutes of the 1-hour session. And then we use the rest of the time for discussion and questions and stuff. This year, again, we have the 1-hour session, but for those 45 minutes that we used for development last year, each of the developers, again, same 3 platforms, will be coding the entire time. And so for 45 straight minutes, they're going to build a much more robust application than we could build in 15. And in addition to that, we're trying to make this more like the television show Iron Chef. I don't know if everybody's familiar with that, but the basic concept is they have some very highly trained chefs come into an arena, I think they call it, and they introduce some mystery ingredient, right? So it might be cinnamon, or it might be squid, or it might be whatever. And so they are given that ingredient, and then the chef is allowed to use anything else they want to make it their own, to make a dish based on that ingredient. And so we're going to try and do something similar with this Mobile SmackDown at CodeMash, where each of the developers has a pretty good idea of what they're going to build already, but I'm going to be introducing some tricks here and there that they'll have to incorporate as they go. to make it a little more competitive, I guess, because we'll get to see how each of the developers approaches that problem on their own platform. But ultimately, what the whole goal of the session is to expose developers to each of the platforms so that they can see, you know, each platform has its strengths and weaknesses, and I want people to be able to see those things. For example, the emulator in Android is a much more tedious chore than it is an iPhone and Windows phone. But on the same token, there are a lot of things about Android development that are better or easier than you may find on the other platforms. So I think that you'll find that you'll learn quite a bit as you look through each of these developers' approaches, how the problem set is solved, how pages are approached, how you manage data, how you do all those kinds of things. Those all just get exposed as the developer works through their app.